This is a podcast from The Times.
The Bugle, audio newspaper for a visual world.
Hello, Buglers, and welcome to issue 112 of The Bugle, the last best hope of Earth. Not my words, the words of Abraham Lincoln. Although, to be fair, he was talking about something else. I can't recall what. I think it might have been his review of a new Aerosmith album. But anyway, the point stands. I'm Andy Zaltzman in London. Bit of background, I'm 200 millionth in line to the British throne, give or take a million or two. I'm also the first comedian ever to be awarded a major retrospective by the Rath Museum in Geneva, Switzerland. Oh, hang on, that wasn't me. That was Swiss artist Alberto Giacometti. Well, matter of time. And I'm also a qualified gymnastics instructor, widely credited with transforming the career of Olympic champion Mary Lou Retton. Come on. Sorry. I'm an unqualified gymnastics instructor. And although I coached Retton to glory in LA in 84 when I was 9, really she did most of the hard work herself and ignored most of what I said. And with me live on the other end of the yoghurt pot string yoghurt pot we use to record the Bugle, it's the hostess with the mostess,
yeah.
John, the screwdriver of destiny, Oliver!
Yes! Hello, Andy.
Hello
Buglers. Well, Andy, what a special day it is today.
Yep.
Can you imagine why it's special?
That's St. George's Day, mate.
That's right. Why else, Andy?
Nothing else, mate.
Really?
Absolutely nothing else, mate.
Really? Are you sure about that?
Absolutely nothing else is special, mate.
Shakespeare's birthday.
Yes,
as well,
Shakespeare's birthday as well.
Who else? What, no one else.
No one else's birthday.
Oh, fuck you, Andy. It's my birthday.
Well, you say that, John, but guess what? Surprise! You thought we'd forgotten, but no, we've got a surprise audio party for you here. In London, I've invited a load of people, as you can hear. I've invited a load of people you'd love to speak to.
Yeah.
They're all just getting to know each other in the soundproof safe now, mm-hmm. including your old English teacher.
Oh, nice.
The one who didn't teach you where to put the f***ing apostrophe.
Oh, that's Mr. Pascoff from Goldington Middle School.
Some of your heroes, football legend Kenny Dalglish.
Oh, God, look, what a sublime passer.
Yep, not so good in the soundproof safe, to be fair. although, really, he generally mumbles when he talks, so it doesn't make much difference to him. Writer and cricketer Samuel Beckett. I'm a big fan of his work. He's in there too.
Yeah, I love
that. 19th century smallpox eradicator Louis Pasteur.
Oh, thanks for turning up, Louis. Well, and what you did was tremendous.
Well, I know how
much. Although I'm a bit more excited that Kenny Dalglish is in there.
Well, also, I know how much you'd hate to have smallpox. That's why
I
invited him.
I appreciate
it. Italian
that.
Male model Fabio.
Oh, fantastic, Fabio.
And your singing coach from way back when, John Bon Jovi. All there.
Hey, JBJ.
And hang on. Here comes the audio cake. This is a chocolate, guava and German salami cake, double-tiered with a layer of scrambled goose egg in the middle, coated in a jalapeno and diesel oil icing, sprinkled with goldfish, caviar and snake larvae, topped with marzipan figures of John, Colin Powell, Belinda Carlisle and Hannah Nasrowi playing mixed doubles table tennis. The candles are modelled on the great death by fire martyrs of the last millennium, Joan of Arc and Thomas Cranmer, and all are now burning at the stake, which is made of a squid ink and duck breast pastilla. There's your audio cake, John. Are you going to cut it?
Why not? Here we go. Oh, wow. You really see the goose egg in the middle. Andy, it is my birthday, and I have to say, little did I think, as a newborn baby in 1977, that 33 years later, technology would have developed this far and that you could be able to waste it in this manner. But I do remember thinking to myself that day as I looked around the world for the first time, I hope there's a toddler out there already that can compete with the level of bullshit that I believe I'm capable of. I'm already lying to this entire hospital room by pretending not to be able to speak yet. I'm sure I can string them along for another few years on that one. I just have this strange instinct that there's a little boy somewhere out there who knows more cricket statistics than he does words, and I must meet him. 33 years later, boom, here we are, Andy.
Well, can we give you the bumps? Can you do audio bumps? Can you just fade John up and down 33 times over the course of the podcast?
No, don't do that.
Just do it very imperceptibly, just so we know it's there.
Well, actually, I inadvertently, Andy, have a birthday birthday present on my birthday for you, Andy.
Oh, right,
a little treat. Because I was going to ask you to guess what I'm doing after this. The point is you won't guess.
Right.
Because in between the end of the
it's
Bugle...
It's not paintballing, is it?
It's not. Right. It's not. It's much better. It's something you're going to really enjoy.
Right, okay.
In between the end of doing this and going to work, I'm going to do a quick job that I've taken almost entirely so that I can hear the reaction in your voice now when you hear about it for the first time. I can't believe
that
has been my
reaction.
No. Andy, I'm going to do a voice in the Smurfs movie.
Oh, yes. You've made it.
I'm going to be a Smurf. I've got five lines. I'm going to be Vanity Smurf. And I have to say, the main reason that went into me saying yes to doing it was how funny it was going to be to talk about on the Bugle. I know it's not the best way to manage a career, but it's the only way I know.
It's the only thing I've got.
Between 3 and 5 lines that
right.
I think will probably get edited down to nothing. But still, it's going to be an incredible experience at the half an hour that I'm in there. Smurf.
Do you get to, do they like paint you up for it?
Well, I presume so.
Yeah.
I
mean, just to get you in the character.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think they give you a little white hat and right. they smash you repeatedly on the head with a hammer so that you go tiny.
So this is Bugle 112, recording the 23rd of April 2010, meaning it is not only 33 years since John Oliver was born.
Yeah.
That's the sound he made. Meaning it is 100 years to the second since big Theodore Roosevelt made his Man in the Arena speech in Paris in 1910, and he said these words: "It's not the critic who counts, not the man who points out how the strong man stumbles, or where the doer of deeds could have done them better. The credit belongs to the man who is actually in the arena, whose face is marred by dust and sweat and blood, who strives valiantly, who errs, who comes short again and again, because there is no effort without error and shortcoming." So in honour of these inspirational words by the man who is better known as Teddy, because he used to suck his thumb and cuddle his teddy bear during Congress meetings, "I have marred my face..." Well, nature did a pretty good job of marring it for me, to be fair. "But I've marred it further with dust and sweat and blood, the three key ingredients of Scottish cuisine, all over my face. And I'll be deliberately erring and falling short again and again, and filling this Bugle with errors and shortcomings. So if this episode is total shit, it's not our fault, John. It's Teddy Roosevelt." Now, that is a good excuse for tanking at a gig.
Sure is.
Blaming Theodore Roosevelt.
Don't talk to me, love. Talk to Teddy.
As always, a section of the Bugle is going straight in the bin. This week, a feature on the new Feel Good Flicks, hitting the world's movie screens this summer, including Dead Match, a hilarious rom-com about 20-somethings Jodie and Ben, two serial killers who meet by chance when trying to murder each other. Soon the sparks fly, and not just from Jodie's trademark chainsaw. She soon finds herself falling deeper and deeper, and not into the literal swamp in which Ben habitually dumps his victims, but in the into the metaphorical swamp of love. Can they find a way to keep things together, unlike the limbs of Jodie's last boyfriend, as the electricity between them grows, like it would eventually on the electric chair if they ever get caught? And also, Taking the Piss, a teen movie set as buddies Frankie and Phil get summer work experience jobs in respectively a public toilet and the World Anti-Doping Agency's urine testing laboratory. Hilariously, Frankie starts providing Phil with samples taken from a gent's urinal in downtown Los Angeles, resulting in 50 of the world's leading athletes testing positive for recreational drugs. And the two buddies become involved in a breakneck chase scene pursued by a vengeful pack of unjustly banned triple jumpers and pole vaulters. 4 out of 10.
Those movies are closer to being greenlit than anyone would be comfortable with.
Well, we all know that, you know, movies get made that shouldn't necessarily have been made, John. I think we've all learned that.
I don't know what you're referring to, Andy. Top story this week, Volcano News Part 2.
What a sequel.
For a start, Andy, I'm absolutely amazed that this Bugle is even happening. I was sure that you were either going to be covered in ash or that you'd have thrown yourself into the volcano as a human sacrifice to appease its fury. That was literally the only two options I could envisage.
I did that, John. And the amazing thing is, it worked, and I live to tell the tale.
Well, that is amazing on every single count involved there. A thousand of travellers are still stuck in airports around the world, presumably living on a diet of expensive bad sandwiches, Cinnabon rolls and smoothies, unless they're an Italian airport, in which case they'll be eating magnificently.
What's a Cinnabon roll?
Cinnabon.
Cinnabon?
Yeah, it's Cinnabon. It's like a cinnamon roll chain.
right.
in airports.
Oh, I see.
They
right.
call it Cinnabon.
Right,
if you'd
the
watched
for?
The film The Love Guru, Andy, right,
yeah,
you'd I've, have seen it prominently
placed. I've got it stored up, John, still. I'm just summoning up the courage. I just want to make sure that our friendship is strong enough
the
to withstand
the intestinal fortitude to know I can handle it. Yeah, it's very wise. It may well be that some buglers are even listening to this still stuck in airports. So, you know, if so, a special hello to you. And I hope you've either bought or successfully shoplifted one of those inflatable neck pillows sometime earlier in the week. The volcano almost completely shut down European airspace for the whole of last week, Andy, costing the airline industry an estimated $1.7 billion. And the airline industry is now apparently seeking compensation from the governments who shut their airports down. What? Are they doing that as a joke, Andy? They are aware that a f***ing volcano erupted, aren't they? The International Air Transportation Association said airspace was being closed based on theoretical models, not on facts. This industry does not want or need bailouts, but this crisis is not the result of running our businesses badly. Look, this is no one's fault. A f***ing volcano erupted. The only thing you can realistically do in this situation is sue the volcano. And if that's going to happen, then the Earth may well want to get itself a good lawyer, because the airlines are going to go in hard. And just behind them will be Indonesia, the city of New Orleans, Bangladesh, Armenia, and many others who've been hurt by the Earth's so-called natural disasters. But what you don't want to happen there is for the Earth to then counter-sue us for humanity squatting without a lease, demanding back rent, and then prosecuting us for criminal damage and theft of natural resources. Actually, do you know what? Come to think of it, we might want to just let this whole volcano thing slide, because we have quite a list of tenancy infractions.
Well, you say no one's to blame, John, but you would not necessarily know that from the media, John, who've been throwing blame around like a 95-year-old woman who accidentally entered a professional wrestling competition. amongst those blamed, Gordon Brown has been blamed by his political opponents. But, right. You know, I mean, understandably, you know, he's called an election.
Yep.
Volcano goes off.
Yep.
Can it just be coincidence? Other people have been blaming the Wright brothers right. for dangling the carrot of powered flight before our eyes when they knew full well a single volcano could ground our species for good. The people of Iceland, they've also been blamed because they've had a volcano problem for hundreds, thousands of years, John, and they still haven't really done anything to sort it out.
What, like shoved a cork in it?
Yeah. You know, you'd have thought they'd have at least made an effort.
Yeah.
And Obama's healthcare bill, that was also blamed. Can you guess who blamed, who said the volcano was a response?
Was it Rush Limbaugh,
It
Andy.
Was, John!
There you go!
One for one. Bit of an odd response, you'd have to say. If the volcano is a response to the healthcare bill being passed, to temporarily strand mostly non-American people, or affect the holiday plans of Americans who are clearly well off enough to fly to Europe and therefore not really the poor who are unjustly benefiting from this bill. Others even have blamed the volcano, indeed volcanoes in general, on homosexuals. which...
What is the rationale there, Andy? What is the link there?
I'm not a geologist, John. I can't say one way or the other. You know, I'm not qualified. After all, my brother did a geology degree. Maybe he knows.
Yeah.
Although he's not a homosexual, so you know, he only knows half of the story, I guess.
Yeah, I don't think he's fully qualified maybe to say then.
Maybe it's the mining of gold lamé that shunts the Earth's magma slightly out of kilter and forces it to volcano out all over the shop.
I think without an unforced full confession from a homosexual, then I just don't think this stands. Although there was another great piece of blame from Hojat Ole Eslam Kazim Siddiqui, the acting Friday prayer leader in Tehran, who blamed non-blanketed women for natural disasters such as the volcano, going on to say, many women who do not dress modestly lead young men astray and spread adultery in society, which increases earthquakes. What? Andy,
that's a pretty vigorous adultery going on.
That's true. I didn't even think of that. I was technically following his train of logic until the leap from adultery to earthquakes. I'm not saying I agreed with any of it, but I could see where his mind was going. And now, I just can't stop thinking about what the next step in that chain of thought would be. Women who do not dress modestly lead young men astray and spread adultery in society, which increases earthquakes, which can shake milk into a thicker substance, giving us the Dairy Queen strawberry cheesequake, which gives us stomach aches, which angers God, who makes tornadoes that transport girls and their dogs to magic kingdoms where they must go with a tin man, a lion and a scarecrow to find their way home. And that is why women need to cover up. Thank you, Tehran, and good night. I'm out of here!
It is a shame, though, that the volcanoes are not caused by homosexuals, if we may make that assumption.
I think it's a safe assumption to make.
Because it would make it a lot easier to predict when they're going to go off. You just have to monitor the build-up of homosexuals, and as soon as that build-up becomes critical, you just evacuate the area until they've burnt themselves out.
I would imagine if volcanoes were controlled by homosexuals, then homosexuals would have used them a lot more in the past under their constant persecution. Any time anyone said something rampantly homophobic, it would be very tempting to go, I'm just going to f***ing shoot a volcano at you now.
Chris, whose fault is the volcano?
Well, I'm inclined to think it's homosexuals.
Right, there we go.
I've been reading to a lot of reliable news sources recently.
It's good to get it from a wide variety of sources, Chris. There has been some magnificent hyperbole coming out of the mouths of frustrated, stranded passengers. Now, I'm not saying that this has been pleasant for anyone who's been displaced, but let's get this into some kind of perspective. One, they didn't endure a fiery death as their planes plummeted out of the sky, so that's something straight away. And two, it's not been a tragedy. It's been uncomfortable, yes. It's been inconvenient, certainly. But you've been delayed. You're not dead. And there was one man on the news, on the BBC News, who described being on holiday on a beach in Malta and realising that he and his wife couldn't get their flight home. He then went on to explain that they'd, on an impromptu whim, hired a coach with some fellow Brits and had driven back to England with a trip on the ferry involved there too. And he chose to explain that little adventure like this. It was like Dunkirk and the Great Escape rolled into one. No, it wasn't, Andy. It wasn't like either of those things for him, unless they were being chased by Nazis and fleeing their certain death. If that was the case, I absolutely apologise, because it seems they really have had the holiday from hell. But if it isn't, he needs to be a bit more careful with the analogies he draws. Later on in the interview, he once again compared the renting of the coach as the Dunkirk spirit. Maybe what's going on here is... Does he know what actually happened at Dunkirk, Andy? Maybe he thinks it was just a bunch of British holidaymakers who'd been inconvenienced by a French ferry strike.
Well, that is, to be fair, in order to keep secrecy during the war, that is how it was reported at the time, I think.
All the news reports I saw featured lots and lots of British people describing the difficulties they've been experiencing and all beaming with happiness. We just love this shit, Andy. I guess it gives us something to legitimately moan about, and nothing makes us happier than being put out and rising above it. It's a triumphant feeling that has been lost from our tragic lack of another decent world war.
But particularly when we can do that in a warmer country than Britain.
It was a week of people learning to travel across land and sea again. It was a nostalgic throwback to a simpler, slower time. Though I did find all the news stories about the hardships faced by professional athletes a little hard to stomach, though. Look at these poor, poor millionaires forced to travel by first-class rail. Heroes, all of them. There are now some worries that a second, much larger neighbouring volcano in Iceland may now also erupt.
It's like Jaws, isn't it?
Yeah, exactly.
Only more so.
Well, it's like on a school bus when one little kid throws up and it might set the fat kid off and then everyone's in trouble.
Did that happen on one of your school trips, John?
It did happen.
Were you either of those two kids?
I wasn't, but I did witness it happen.
Really? You didn't?
And it was spectacular. It was on the way to Whipsnade Zoo.
Oh, well, there you go.
Finance news now. And President Obama yesterday was down on Wall Street to deliver a speech on Wall Street to reform a street which was not too keen to hear what he had to say. Talking about financial industry lobbyists descending on Washington, the president said, if these folks want to fight, it's a fight I'm willing to have. The problem is, there is no point talking tough, Andy, to people who are not even pretending to listen anymore. Wall Street is fiercely fighting Obama's reforms, having seemingly learned absolutely nothing from the past 2 years, apart from, oh, well, that wasn't that bad, and, well, it seems if you f*** up big enough, everything works out fine. So let's make sure that when we next f*** up, we f*** up huge.
It's like childbirth, John, isn't it? Yeah. You forget the pain of recession when you get the joy of recovery afterwards.
Exactly. They also argue, the banks, that they produce a lot of money, which then trickles down the economy, which is interesting, because if that's true, there does seem to be a major blockage right near the top of that trickle-down pipe.
And what trickles down is generally piss.
Exactly.
If the history of trickling down is anything to go by.
Republicans are fiercely opposing the regulation bill on one side, saying it goes too far. And there are a number of Nobel Prize-winning economists and Federal Reserve officials who are opposing it on the other side, saying it doesn't go far enough. Obama is after, amongst other things, consumer protections, tighter regulation on high-risk derivatives, and a system that ensures that no one bank will ever be too big to fail again. He said, these changes have the added benefit of creating incentives within the industry to ensure that no one company can ever threaten to bring down the whole economy. To that end, the bill would also enact what's known as the Volcker Rule, which places some limits on the size of banks and the kinds of risks that banking institutions can take. But, and like most things concerning the economy, Andy, it's a large, confusing, unwieldy but. It's the kind of gigantic but that hung off William the Refrigerator Perry during the glory days of the Chicago Bears.
Is it the kind of but that Sir Mix-a-Lot likes to hear about when he's reading his economics news?
It's exactly that kind of but, Andy. I cannot lie. That's the kind of but you're dealing with here. But the Volcker Rule, while in the bill, isn't really enacted to the full at all. Instead, the bill calls for a study to be conducted on the rule, after which regulators would implement some version of it. There's an old phrase, Andy, that says, if it looks like nothing, smells like nothing, and tastes like nothing, then it might just be that the waiter has forgotten your order. And that looks like it could be true of this bill, especially as the markets actually went up yesterday, which would seem to suggest that no one on Wall Street is that concerned.
Well, it's very difficult to get these things right, John, and certainly it's appeared in the past that the world's politicians didn't really grasp the economic bull by the horns as a hide behind a phone box whilst the bull charged into a crowded lingerie store, then emerged into the ensuing underwear-strewn mayhem brandishing a fake plastic Viking helmet, shouting, trust me, it's all under control. So that's, I don't, you know, as I've said before in this podcast, I don't understand economics.
Yes.
And, you know, I think that's right. It's right not to do that, John.
I agree.
And I think, it seems to me that basically the markets behaved a bit like a modern-day version of Icarus from the ancient Greek myth, with his father Daedalus, the celebrity labyrinth designer. Icarus used special wax wings to effect an ambitious jailbreak from HMP Knossos in ancient Crete. But tragically, the boy, with an overconfidence stemming from a mixture of youth and a lack of knowledge of physics, ignored his old man's warnings not to fly too close to the sun. Sure enough, his wings melted, and flap as he might, the youngster smash-landed in the sea, copping some fatal injuries. But his death was not pointless, John, because he became immortalised as the symbol of the dangers of overreaching ambition. He still retains the world record for the highest altitude attained on wax wings, and perhaps most importantly, he also helped improve aircraft safety.
There,
because thanks to him, most of the world's leading airlines now use metal rather than wax wings. And without Icarus, it's doubtful that air travel would even be so popular or indeed legal. So I think the financial markets have acted really in a similar way to Icarus, but without having read the second half of the story, and taken their steps a bit further. You know, they didn't just want to approach the sun because they wanted to fly as high as possible and achieve an unattainable dream. They actually wanted to stick a flag in the sun, claim ownership of it, then sell it, buy it back again at a knockdown rate after forcing its price down by leaking a rumour that it was about to run out of fire. Then, after safeguarding their own pension and payoff, cause the sun to go bankrupt and make the rest of us live in the dark.
South Park news now, and Andy, last week Comedy Central censored an episode of South Park over its amusing non-depiction of the Prophet Muhammad, or to be more accurate, his appearance in a bear costume and a windowless U-Haul truck. Now, this was followed by a cowardly veiled threat from a whack job group here in New York who said, we have to warn Matt and Trey that what they're doing is stupid. I don't think they would even deny that, for a start. And they will probably wind up like Theo van Gogh for airing this show, the murdered Dutch director. They're going to say, this is not a threat, but a warning of the reality that will likely happen to them. And it's so hard to know where the line is, Andy, and at what point people have to accept that they're just going to occasionally be offended by things in life. And that's not necessarily the end of the world, especially if they choose not to make it that way. I do think it's important to find a way to prevent this kind of thing from happening again. So Andy and I, this week on The Bugle, have another very special guest in the soundproof safe this week with Kenny Dalglish and his friends. I wonder if you can guess who it is. Please don't actually guess, as you getting the answer correct could put us all in serious jeopardy. Anyway, mystery guest, thank you very much for joining us. Sorry you've had such an offensive week. Please don't make any noise which could construe who you are. Just write down the answer to each question I have for you now on a piece of paper and just slide it through the lid with your hands, fins or robot arms, whichever it is you have, all three, if that's the case. So just a couple of questions I have for you.
Oh, is it one of those Hindu ones you're talking of? Those?
No, not necessarily, Andy. Not necessarily. Please don't make this a guessing game. I live in the same city as these crazy people. I just had a couple of questions for you, mystery guest. How angry are you with me at the moment? He says not that angry, Andy, or she. Right. She says yeah. It says not that angry.
Well, what's the handwriting like? Is it masculine or feminine?
I can't describe it.
Right. Mountainous or not?
Okay, so a mystery guest. What if I told you that I'd seen the South Park episode and enjoyed it? Are you more or less angry with me now? It says a bit angrier, actually, Andy.
All right.
A bit angrier now.
Yeah.
Okay, so are you shout at me angry or wish harm upon me angry? Because if it's the first one, to be honest, I'm not really bothered. He says just shout at me angry. It's just shout at me angry. That's not too bad.
So you can live with that.
Exactly. Join the line, mystery guest.
Long line.
And finally...
It's anything like that gig we did in York.
Oh, boy. What a line. And finally, mystery guest, what if I told you that I was picturing the Prophet Muhammad in my mind now? Is that offensive? Picturing in my mind. Okay, here it comes. Okay, the note says, yes, because you obviously just tried to provoke a reaction, but unless you describe it in detail, it's probably fine. He goes on to say, but if I am who you seem to be implying I am, then you are directly putting words in my mouth, if indeed I have a mouth, and that seems provocative too. Well, thank you very much for joining us, mystery guest. It seems it's a complicated issue.
Asking what he thinks about Israeli settlements on the West Bank.
I think he's sleeping.
All right, okay. Well, it was interesting that the message that you said posted on this Islamist website, this is not a threat, but a warning of the reality that will likely happen to them. Now,
yes.
Now listen. I would like to say to these people who posted this message, you will probably end up getting run over by a large bus. Now, that's not a threat. I'm not saying I'm going to hire a bus, hunt you down and run you over. I'm just saying if you're as moronic when you're crossing the road as you are when you're posting on your website, you will almost certainly be run over by a bus. So, and it was Prophet Muhammad was replaced with Santa Claus, as I understand. Is that right? In the South Park episode, which I find very offensive, John, as an atheist, lapsed Jew, who enjoys getting loads of presents for Christmas, you know, toys, computer games, scooters, the works. I find it offensive that the man who so selflessly travels the world at life-endangering, reindeer-killing speed to bring me my gifts should be mocked on a TV show. I find it appalling.
I do think it's all a bit of an overreaction, Andy. It's a death threat on the internet. Exactly. The internet. That's basically what the internet is for. It's just a series of death threats with the occasional video of a sleeping kitten on a bulldog's back.
I've seen people threaten death to each other just arguing over which footballer is better at scoring goals. In the interest of fairness, we should say we have edited out our scheduled skit about Jupiter, the ancient Roman god, dressing up like Celine Dion and chainsawing his own nadgers off. I just don't want to offend the extreme fundamentalist Romans, so they'll feed us to the lions. Bugle feature section now, election mayhem, the revenge of democracy. And I think that's what it's now being called over here. They've just decided to rebrand it.
That's a good idea.
Revolution is in the air, buglers. Britain is aflame with the kerosene of upheaval. Everything we thought we knew is false, and a new dawn is dawning. And nothing will ever be the same again, John. All this from just a few opinion polls. That's how alive our democracy is after last week's first prime ministerial TV debate, which was reported exclusively on the Bugle. No other media organ ran with it.
That's almost true.
we told you last week that Nick Clegg, the leader of the Liberal Democrat Party, Britain's third biggest political party, recently had done well. Well, in fact, after that, he rocketed up like a 1950s Russian dog in the opinion polls, right to the top, overtaking the massively unpopular government and the quite unpopular opposition. But will Clegg, like that cosmopooch, drift off aimlessly before disintegrating on re-entry to the real world? Well, time will tell. But in the second debate last night, John. It was a little bit of a squabble, but Clegg pretty much held his own. So we have to ask the question, could the Liberal Democrats, the third party traditionally, suddenly wrought a victory in the election on a surge of public approval? And the answer is no. Though no, they could not, John, because of our first-past-the-post system,
yes,
in which each MP is elected directly by his local constituents. That it is impossible. I think the Liberal Democrats could get every single vote cast in the country and still only get about 25% of the seats. And in fact, I put this into an online seat predictor, and who am I to argue with the internet, John? Mm-hmm. And I put all three main parties in at 33.3% of the vote.
Right.
And the predictor predicted that Labour would win 320 seats, the Conservatives 210, and the Liberal Democrats 100. So basically what that is saying is, up yours, democracy. We are Britain. We'll do it our British way, our God-given British way. And if that means some people's votes are worth a fraction of the others, then up yours, voters. We won the war. We'll decide how our democracy work, not you Nazis and or communists.
The Guardian in England ran with an article this week describing Nick Clegg as Britain's Obama. And you know, it's unclear as to, you know, whether that's as close to a black person as Britain is willing to elect as a leader, a young white man. But also, it kind of underestimates just exactly what Nick Clegg is up against under the British electoral system. It's even more than Obama was up against with endemic American racism.
There were some amazing attacks on Clegg this week, including this one from the Mail on Sunday, which is traditionally not entirely a vestige of truth. Mm-hmm. And they wrote, his wife is Spanish, his mother Dutch, his father half Russian, and his spin doctor is German. Ooh. Is there anything British about Lib Dem leader Nick Ooh. Clegg? What a Ooh, question! And the answer
nasty.
Is, how much more British could he get? A genetic hotspot yes. willing to scour the world for people to employ. A Spanish wife, links to Holland, Russia and Germany. The guy's basically a member of the royal family. We have the prospect of the first hung parliament since 1974. Incidentally, when I was lucky enough to be in the womb, cranking out some top-quality gags about indecisive government and the impossibility of compromise in a traditionally confrontational system, and how stupid umbilical cords look. Yeah. Hey, what's up with them? And who in here is getting sick of the amniotic fluid? What's with that stuff? So, you know how it is when you're waggling your legs about and your foot kicks the wall of the womb? Wow, gross out, man. anyway, but that is when there was the last hung parliament, when I was safely ensconced in the womb. And as the race has tightened this time round, there's been a slightly bizarre twist in which the fear of a hung parliament has basically become the central plank in the increasingly mouldy hull of the leaky wooden dinghy that is the Conservative campaign. They've really played the don't let there be a hung parliament, we'll probably all die card with the gusto of people who almost revel in their own failure to garner public approval. Oh, forget everything else they've implored voters. We know you don't like us and haven't responded to what we've said we'll do, but surely it's better to have a government that does what you don't want it to do than to have no government not doing anything at all. Vote Conservative! What an inspiring call to arms, John. More on the election next week. Your emails now, and well, thank you to the many of you who've sent in links to pictures of paintings of Jesus in which his stomach musculature looks, well, shall we say, like a gentleman's droobler.
Let's not say that. Let's not say
okay,
that.
Okay, let's not say that. Yeah. But I mean, you know, it's a fact.
Yeah.
But, so thanks for those, and if you just put Gentleman, Droobler and Jesus into Google, I'm sure that it'll come up for those of you who want to see them. But this email comes from Ben, who writes on the subject, a poorly contrived and not entirely accurate volcano pun. I like the way this is heading. Dear Andy and John, and Chris, I suppose. Well, that's getting better,
He's
Chris.
Winning
thanks.
Around. Getting You're better. Winning around, Chris.
Bring it on.
With all these recent volcano shenanigans, there's been a lot of doom and gloom regarding all the people that have been stranded in various exotic locations around the world. Yeah, some exotic, but quite a few of them were in Germany as well. And all those poor bastards who have to spend another few weeks out in the tropics being bathed in sunshine really do have my full sympathy. However, on the upside, all these grounded planes must have led to a huge decrease in carbon dioxide emissions, and so in a way I think we almost consider this volcanic ash to be a blessing in disguise. The skies, a blessing in the skies.
Oh,
the skies, disguise.
I get it.
Right.
I get it.
Well, I liked it.
Yeah.
I liked it. Chris? Yeah. What do you think?
Could you just give it one more time?
You can't
please?
Work on it. You can't work on this podcast if you don't like shit puns, mate.
That's not true.
I'm fully aware of your puns, Andy.
Yeah.
You can't work on the British end of this podcast if you don't like shit puns. And one final sport email on the subject Liverpool Football Club buying strategy.
Yes.
And this comes from William Hughes in Chicago.
Let's do this.
Illinois. Who writes, Dear John and Andy, in order of number of homelands betrayed by seeking citizenship from the First Nation to show so you at... Oh, dear.
Dear John, swing and a miss.
Dear John and Andy, in order of number of homelands betrayed by seeking citizenship from the First Nation to show you a little leg. Well, that's 2-1, isn't it? I tried to get citizenship from Malawi. They wouldn't have me. I said I don't have the right skills. I don't need bullshit over there, apparently. Anyway, I'm sympathetic to John's desire to own his beloved Liverpool Football Club, especially since it would give him the chance to show off his certainly formidable, in brackets, football skills against opponents in his own league instead of those bastions of manly sport, New York comedy writers.
Yes.
I think he's suggesting all these stories you keep telling us about how good you are at football only because the people you play with basically, in effect, barely have spinal cords. However, there's no such thing as a free lunch. While I'm willing to put up $100 million of my own capital up front, I expect you two to work for the money in the most lucrative way possible, escorting teenage girls to junior proms.
Uh-oh.
John is a renowned movie star and rapper.
Yeah.
Well, certainly the latter is true. The only thing we have to worry about is the wrath of nervous fathers. Uh-huh. Luckily, you're British, so most of them will assume you are charmingly homosexual.
Right.
Much like Hugh Grant.
Yeah.
Is that Hugh Grant doing the assuming?
He's not either of those things.
Zing! Take that, Grant. Andy presents a more interesting case. Well, I'm sure there are many women, Crimean nurses perhaps, or even British nurses working in Crimea, more appropriately, who find themselves beguiled by a face that resembles nothing so much as the spawn of Winston Churchill and a particularly turgid radish. Nicely put. I believe that's how my father-in-law described me at our wedding. I always dreamed my daughter would marry the spawn of Winston Churchill and the turgid radish.
Now let's just get this over
with. Welcome to the family. Such a combination rarely appears in the pages of Teen Beat. Thus, we market you to young girls with many enemies. What shock these enemies will feel when prom night comes around and instead of some teen heartthrob at her door, it's a 36-year-old man with a 20-minute pun about Oliver Cromwell. That might even be more lucrative than John. Well, I'm 35, so f*** you. And my Cromwell pun is 25 minutes long.
And I tell you what, we haven't heard back from Ali.
Oh, really?
I think I've been dumped. I think I'll be dumped before prom night. It's worse than not going to prom at all.
That sounds like a musical about to happen.
Dumped before prom night. I feel so alone.
Did you have to go to a prom night to get your green card or not?
No, I thought. Oh. I mean, that could. I think that's citizenship.
Oh, right, I see.
Yeah, to get citizenship, you have to go to a prom night and execute a functional caterpillar across the floor.
So, well, that counts as the sports section this week, since we haven't had time to write it.
Yeah. So. Other than congratulations to the Denver Broncos signing Tim Tebow,
right,
which is a spectacularly bad decision. Tim Tebow is a a great fan of the Lord, Andy.
Oh, is he?
And
is he a great fan of the Bugle?
He thinks... No, I don't think those two are mutually exclusive. That's not true. But he's a big fan of God.
Yeah.
And... this trade, it's a big surprise that Tebow's gone in the first round. Yeah. But all I can say is God must hate the Denver Broncos. He must hate them. If he's had anything to do with this trade, he must f***ing hate them.
Well, that's quite a lot of hate coming out towards this Tebow guy, John.
Yeah, I don't like him at all, Andy. He thanks God. This is what I don't like about him, Andy. I can't remember mentioning this before. He thanks God instead of his offensive line.
Right.
And these guys spent basically best part of an hour and a half just getting pounded by 400-pound defensive linemen. And the first thing Tebow does is comes out afterwards and say, I'd like to thank God for that. Really? If I was a defensive lineman, and an offensive lineman rather, if I was an offensive lineman in front of Tebow, I would say, let's see how God blocks for you. Next play, Tim. Let's see how God does it. Oh, he didn't seem to read that blitz very well, did he? Ouch, that looked painful. My name's Marvin, by the way. Next time press conference runs around, M-A-R-V-I-N. Let's try this again.
How do you shape up as an offensive lineman, John?
Bad.
I mean, you don't have the obvious physique for
very
it.
Very bad.
I've seen you completely fail to make any tackles in football over the course of several years, so in real football. So that's about it for the Bugle this week. It came to you this week in extra high definition and also in 5D, the first ever five-dimension podcast.
Wow.
Yeah.
I thought I felt something different.
Pretty impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You don't actually notice it, but, you know, it's not, you know, nice to be able to tell people
that is
how you've listened to it. You can hear more of me, if you want, on my sister's podcast this week, Answer Me This, on which I was on this week, and I was answering this and that as
yes.
well.
Good.
So do listen to that. It's very good.
I'll tune in.
Do tune into that, John, and other buglers. We seem to be doing some mutual plugging on our siblingly podcasts.
Nepotism of the best kind.
So that's it, buglers. Bye-bye until next time.
Bye-bye until next week, buglers.
This is a Times Online podcast. For more podcasts, go to timesonline.co.uk/podcasts.